The story of Samuel Zemure reads like a Hollywood script, too wild to be true. A penniless Jewish immigrant who arrived in America at 15, Zemure built a fruit empire so vast it altered the fate of nations. Starting with nothing but determination, he eventually swallowed the mighty United Fruit Company, the corporate behemoth that controlled the banana trade across the Americas. His journey from fruit peddler to business titan embodies the American dream in its most extreme form, earning him the nickname Sam the Banana Man. What makes Zemure's story so compelling is how it mirrors America's own evolution into a global power. His life embodied both the brilliance and moral compromises of American capitalism. Incredible innovation alongside troubling interventions in sovereign nations. Was he a visionary businessman or an exploitative colonizer? A self-made success story or the embodiment of the ugly American abroad? His legacy remains deeply controversial, forcing us to confront uncomfortable questions about power, ambition, and empire building that still resonate today. In 1893, teenage Sam Zemure discovered bananas in Selma, Alabama, after fleeing Eastern Europe's pogroms. His immigrant's perspective allowed him to see opportunities others missed. While major fruit companies dismissed spotted ripes as worthless, Zemure saw potential. "Ripes aren't trash," he declared. "They're just bananas that need to be sold today instead of tomorrow." He bought these discounted bananas and quickly sold them to small-town grocers along rail lines. This ability to turn inefficiencies into advantages became his trademark. Unlike United Fruit executives in Boston offices, Zemure worked in the field, developing deep knowledge of his product and customers. His hands-on approach earned him his nickname and distinguished him from competitors. Zemure's success stemmed from challenging conventional wisdom. When faced with supposed impossibilities, whether selling spotted fruit or developing unsuitable land, he found creative solutions rather than accepting defeat. By the early 1900s, Zemure had evolved from fruit peddler to major industry player. His partnership with Ashbel Hubbard enabled entry into the lucrative green banana market, requiring control of the entire supply chain. Zemure's problem-solving approach was direct. Rather than work around obstacles, he absorbed them. When shipping costs threatened profits, he bought ships. When political instability loomed, he engaged in local politics. This vertical integration became his signature strategy. In Honduras, he established plantations to control quality, immersing himself in an environment far removed from his Eastern European roots. Unlike other executives who stayed in northern offices, Zemure spent months in the jungle studying soil and growing techniques. "If you want to know about bananas," he told managers, "you have to get mud on your shoes." He built company towns with housing, schools, and hospitals for workers. While these communities offered better living conditions than the local standard, they reinforced a hierarchical system with Americans at the top and local workers below, eventually leading to social tensions. When the Honduran government threatened to cancel his land concessions in 1911, Zemure took extraordinary action. He organized a revolution to replace President Miguel Davila with General Manuel Bonilla, who favored his interests. He enlisted Lee Christmas, a renowned American mercenary, and assembled a force of New Orleans mercenaries and adventurers. Using the swift warship Hornet and Christmas's clever deception tactics at the Battle of La Ceiba, they overcame government forces despite being outnumbered. The revolution succeeded, with Davila resigning and Bonilla winning the subsequent election. Zemure's reward was extensive, valuable land concessions and tax exemptions along Honduras' northern coast. This episode highlighted both Zemure's bold tactics and complex ethics. While violating Honduran sovereignty, he had genuine local support for Bonilla. His methods, backing friendly leaders, financing local uprisings, and managing media coverage, would later be mirrored in CIA operations throughout Central America. Zamuri's expanding Cuyamel Fruit Company soon clashed with United Fruit, nicknamed El Pulpo, the octopus, for its vast Central American presence. United Fruit operated like a sovereign power, complete with railroads, telegraph lines, and its own shipping fleet. Zamuri fought this giant through clever guerrilla tactics. His banana cowboys harvested fruit in contested territories before United Fruit could claim them. When blocked from certain lands, he shrewdly purchased disputed territory from both Nicaragua and Honduras, declaring, "I'm buying from both sides, so I can't lose." When United Fruit leveraged U.S. State Department pressure against him, Zamuri responded by developing alternative transportation routes and quietly backing local opposition to United Fruit's interests. His hands-on leadership style contrasted sharply with United Fruit's distant executive management, giving him crucial advantages. The rivalry culminated in 1929 when United Fruit purchased Cuyamel for $31.5 million in stock, making Zamuri one of its largest shareholders. But this acquisition wasn't the end. It was just the beginning of his most daring move. After selling Cuyamel to United Fruit, Zamuri briefly retired to New Orleans following the 1929 stock market crash that devastated both companies' values. Concerned about United Fruit's decline under Boston executives, he attempted to offer advice but was dismissively told, "You've had your day. Now we're running this company." In response, Zamuri gathered shareholder proxies, stormed a United Fruit board meeting, and declared, "You've been running this company long enough. You've run it almost to ruin. Now I'm going to run it my way." At 55, Zamuri became president of his former rival. He moved headquarters to New Orleans, cut executive expenses, and implemented hands-on management. Under his leadership, United Fruit thrived despite the Great Depression, cementing his reputation as one of the era's most effective business leaders. Zamuri lived a life of stark contrasts as United Fruit's president. His philanthropy included funding Central American hospitals and schools, supporting Tulane University, and helping establish Israel, often anonymously, following Jewish tradition. "I have an obligation to repay my debt to life," he said of his giving. Yet his protection of United Fruit's interests revealed ruthlessness. When Guatemala's President Arbenz threatened company lands with reforms in the 1950s, Zamuri worked with PR pioneer Edward Bernays to paint Arbenz as a communist threat. The resulting CIA-backed coup installed a military government favorable to United Fruit, triggering decades of civil war that claimed 200,000 lives. Zamuri retired in the late 1950s and died in 1961 at 84, leaving half his $30 million fortune to New Orleans Touro Infirmary. United Fruit later declined, eventually becoming Chiquita Brands International. His journey from penniless immigrant to corporate titan exemplifies the American dream's extremes. While his business innovations and leadership and vertical integration influence modern practice, his legacy raises critical questions about the moral costs of global business success.